Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Happy Tuesday. Welcome to the Conditions and Maintenance of Certification Task Force. We will get started here with official roll call. Denise Webb.
Present.
Raj Watwani.
Here.
Orlin Peterson.
Here. Good morning.
Ken Kawamoto, I believe, is still on vacation. Lucky Ken. Sasha Termott.
Here.
Les Leonard. I believe he's absent so far. Maybe he'll join us later. And John Travis.
Here.
Thank you. Okay. Let's see. Do we have Kate on the line yet? All right. Can we go to the next slide? Okay. So this is just a review of the task force charge for this particular task force. I know we just kind of keep showing this, but we want to, as a reminder for both the public and our task force members, because we have so many concurrent task forces, just as a refresher that this group is providing recommendations on the API, real work testing and attestations, conditions and maintenance of certification, updates to most of the 2015 edition health IT certification criteria, and changes to the certification program, and deregulatory actions in which we are going to spend a little bit of time talking about today. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Raj Watwani, one of our co-chairs, to kick us off on that topic. Raj?
Great. Thank you, Lauren. Lots of good progress, it seems like, over these meetings. So thank you all for putting so much time towards this. I know it's hard to do this for the second or third week or whatever week we're in, so I appreciate it. We're getting towards the end of things, so that's good news, and I think lots of good recommendations coming from all of us. So if we can jump to the next slide, we got into some of this yesterday. Just kind of the quick summary, I'm going to jump down to the bottom in regards to the kind of deregulation, decertification, the removal of randomized surveillance requirements, removal of the 2014 edition from the Code of Federal Regulations, removal of the ONC-approved accreditor from the ONC Health Certification Program. Number four is removal of certain 2015 edition certification criteria and standards. Five, removal of certain program requirements, and then six is recognition of FDA. And then I think in the subsequent slides, we can start going through each one of these. And I know we made it through the first couple of these yesterday. So if we can jump to the next slide. I do want to start by revisiting the removal of randomized surveillance requirements. We had made the request for some data from the ONC, and those data were provided. Lauren, I'm assuming we can speak about those data publicly.
Sorry, what data is that again, Rush?
The data that was sent out about the surveillance numbers, can we speak about those data publicly?
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's all information that can be found in the chapel.
Oh, anyway. Okay. So, and did this go to everybody, or is
it? Hey, Raj, this is Kate. I had some computer issues. I just sent it to you and Denise.
Oh, okay. So to share this with folks, it sounds like in 2016, between August 2016 and present, there were 55 unique randomized surveillance activities. And each surveillance activity could assess multiple criteria. So across those 55 surveillance activities, there were 276 criteria assessments. And then it further states that the 2% requirement was only enforced in 2016, why I think that overall number of 55 is lower than it would be if 2% enforcement had been continued through the years. Of those, and this is where it gets a little bit tricky here, of those randomized surveillance activity, it says that there were 261 criteria, so 261 of the 276, that resulted in no nonconformity, and 15 criteria assessments that resulted in nonconformity. And then it further breaks those down. So depending on how you look at these data, it kind of tells a different story. If you look at the total of 55 unique randomized surveillance activities. Of those 55, 11 resulted in the identification of a nonconformity, which is approximately 20 to 25%, if that gives people any information. I don't know what a reasonable number is there, but 20% to me seems kind of high.
Rush, could you repeat that last couple of statements? I'm just trying to reconcile the numbers of the volume of, what was it, 15, 16 nonconformities out of 270-some-odd criteria tested.
Yeah, so let's separate. So let's first talk about just the 55 unique randomized surveillance activities. You just focus
on,
if you look at just those 55, 11 of those activities, 11 of the 55, resulted in the identification of a nonconformity. So that's one way to look at the data. And then
I follow you. You got it.
And then because each unique randomized surveillance activity can assess multiple criteria, that's where that number of 276 comes.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah, the only, and I don't know if this is only a way of establishing relativity, and I don't know that it's necessary to do. Be curious how many nonconformities were identified through randomized surveillance versus through complaint-driven enforcement. I would imagine the number's much higher in the complaint-driven enforcement, and that is as it should be, because that's going to be a more comprehensive input source, because that involves the entire user base and third parties and other interested stakeholders who might find issue with the use of certified products and their capabilities in production. And it's probably more of a barometer geared to something closing in on production. And I just wonder if that's the value statement. I think I mentioned yesterday that I suspect ONC is substituting randomized surveillance in a way for real-world testing to draw closer to an evaluation. So obviously the randomized surveillance was not without its worth, because the ACBs affirmed finding nonconformities, so it wasn't strictly a matter of people, not quite understanding, responding to the surveys or responding to, observed witness walkthroughs of the use of the application, there were actual findings. But that, I just wonder if they're relying on a strategy to, ONC is relying on a strategy to emphasize more connection to production use as a primary means of achieving a similar end, which is to have assurance that the products are living up to their certifications as used.
Yeah.
If everybody'd like to know, I was just looking at this table, and it shows that for reactive surveillance activities, there were a total of 694, and 608 resulted in nonconformity. These are unique reactive surveillance activities, not certifications criteria.
Yeah. That's kind of where I was going is that looking at the whole manner of the surveillance program, the far greatest weight of due diligence and value and effort, I think, was in that in terms of actual investigation and actual activity. I recall from the randomized surveillance that there was significant effort on the part of our certifying bodies to conduct it for what I would say was a lower yield.
While 20%, roughly 20% of those unique surveillance, randomized surveillance opportunities or activities resulted in nonconformity, the actual assessed criteria only resulted in nonconformity of 5.2 0.43% of the time. So the accuracy.
I was just going to say, you know, given a scarce resource, and obviously, at least it seems obvious to me, taking the tactic of emphasizing production-based assessment and proof points. I mean, number one, ONC and the ACBs are, in a manner of speaking, shifting a level of the effort to the vendors by requiring real-world testing, and that's a point of its value. They still have complaint-driven enforcement. They still have the language we saw yesterday about the discretion to engage in randomized surveillance, although if we're arguing for its removal altogether, that takes away the may. But just in terms of where the investment and the return are, given the level of effort, I feel like between real-world testing and complaint-driven enforcement and the authorities ONC has for enhanced surveillance, I'm not sure what value is derived from randomized surveillance.
I think it's appropriate to leave the discretion.
Yeah.
As proposed.
It leaves it available, and that may be in case where there is evidence that more effort, it winds up being a complementary tool where more emphasis is placed in that method when it's called for, but maybe not as so much as a routine, ongoing, required activity.
And I do think the proposal that Sasha suggested about the one requirement that they were going to remove remain related to the randomized and the 12-month period for assessing the same health IT.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Okay, so any other thoughts on the 2%? Anyone kind of opposed to anyone have a different thought on that? Okay, well, I think we can move on then. So we're going to, no real recommendations around that, but keeping Sasha's recommendation on clarification of language there. And then did we make it through all of number two yesterday, the removal of the 24?
Yes.
We did?
Yes, we made it all the way to number four.
Great. All right, let's jump over there.
Two and three were pretty straightforward.
Okay. We go to the next slide, please. There we go. Thank you. All right, so jumping to number four here, 2015 edition certification criteria and standards. You can see on the slide on the lower right the proposed criteria to be removed. Thoughts on this?
So this is Sasha. ONC gave, I think, three reasons that they proposed to remove these criteria. And they said that they thought that in some cases the criteria didn't necessarily represent the latest standards or methods that are represented in interoperability criteria. Overall, these are not interoperability related criteria, whereas other criteria incorporate many of these data capture elements, for example, but are more focused on the program goal of interoperability. And they say that they believe all of these features are widely adopted in electronic health records and will continue to be included in electronic health records, even if not certified. I guess my assessment is that I would agree these are not interoperability-centric criteria. They are widely adopted in electronic health records. And they're not going to be removed from electronic health records, even if they aren't included in certification. So I found ONC's presentation of reasons convincing.
Yes, and also I think because of the USCDI and interoperability and the requirement of certain data elements to be available for exchange, that would indirectly necessitate that a number of these data elements have to be continued to be captured or collected in the EHR. So I think this is I think their justification is pretty solid.
John, any thoughts from your side?
I don't have any. I think they're reasonable. I mean, they're kind of in the realm of similar, if we were talking quality measures being, so to speak, a little bit topped out. There are other things that motivate the data collection to occur on a lot of these. To support other requirements for interoperability. So I don't feel like they're really gone. They are preserved in a manner that's meaningful.
Sorry, John.
No, I didn't have any further thought. Please go ahead.
Did anyone think there were other areas that should be included that weren't? Nothing came to top of mind for me, but I thought we should ask that.
I can't say for what we've been through so far in some pretty deep reads that anything else struck us as, oh, that shouldn't be retained. I'm sorry, or that should be removed of the things that carry over from the original 2015 edition.
Are there other criteria? I guess, like, I'm just looking at the list now that would not be as necessary. So demographics, for example, would seem to me to fall into the same type of criteria as like problem list
yeah.
or location list.
If the requirement remains in the USCDI required data classes, it's
right.
That's an opportunity to still.
Demographics is criterion A5, if I'm looking at the right row here. I might have a similar question about family health history. I assume that at some point that will be incorporated into USCDI. It seems a little bit strange to have a data capture requirement that isn't required by CMS's programs in certification separate from what's in USCDI.
That actually might be a principle to adopt, Sasha, or at least this raise it as a if we want to make a recommendation, I'd be okay with it. But, you know, that if you have the requirement for the interoperability side, including the standard for any code set or nomenclature, you in essence are still requiring the EHR to be able to collect that data in the form that interoperability demands, and you really don't need a separate requirement to prove that you can add, modify, you know, do the fairly basic things that are basic EHR operations. Because the other thing I'd consider, you know, just not even so much devil's advocacy, but to think through is one of the things that is a goal for the data capture and the rendering is to prove that there is an ability to, and they raised this in the EHR burden reduction report from ONC, the reliability of local mappings or the reliability of mapping within the EHR to move from either vendor-specific or local adoption of code sets to the normalized standards for vocabulary or code sets. And I don't know that that's something that's really very, I mean, the certification testing confirm that you had that ability, but that doesn't really do much to improve the quality of local mappings if they're the problem. That's the problem of the implementation, not of the capability. So I don't know. I think you're right. I don't know there's a ton of value in retaining a collection requirement that's also a data exchange requirement where the standards and the code sets are really also enforced.
Do we want to recommend demographics and family history?
also be removed?
I'm okay with recommending the principle of removing criteria that are already found in the interoperability criteria as a principle, and then demographics would qualify for that. I think family health history is, you know, I don't think we'll see the form of the US CDI in the future that we saw it as initially proposed. We're going to see, I imagine at some point we'll get a publication of a roadmap of the required data classes, or they will simply be proposed in future rulemaking, and we'll see family health history show up or something similar. Do we want to preserve it until that time comes and adopt the principle of removing data capture criteria that are repeated in required data for interoperability and then just apply it as it comes?
I think that would be an appropriate recommendation because then ONC can take that principle and then decide where additionally they should apply it before publishing the final rule.
Yeah. And it may prevent them from proposing criteria for things that are already going to be required in the interoperability criteria for data.
Yeah, I kind of like that. That makes sense to me.
I agree, and I'm trying to capture that proposal in the deregulatory actions notes on the Google Doc. So if folks have any suggestions on the wording or anything of how I've captured it, you can comment there.
Very good.
Thanks, Sasha.
All right. Any other thoughts on this one? Okay, go to the next slide. Number five, removal of certain ONC health IT certification program requirements. Does anyone know the page numbers on this one for the?
Page 54.
Thank you.
The preamble, 54, 55, and then FDA is 56.
Okay, thoughts on this one?
I had one, and I was trying to make sure I read it correctly. There's a statement, I'm trying to digest the text quickly. There's a statement about for what is being removed that the information is already available on vendor websites, and I kind of didn't fully understand the way the comment was characterized as if that was apart from the current, you know, transparency disclosure statements that are on the websites, because if you remove them, where do they think they reside?
John, I think that the way this works, and it is super confusing, I agree, but so vendors are required to provide cost and limitations information currently on their websites.
Right.
They're also
right.
required to make a specific attestation to their ACB that they provide this
right.
to any party. And so ONC is saying, hey, it's stupid to provide an attestation to your ACB that you provide this if it's already required to be on your website, because obviously it's provided, it's on the website, which can be checked by anyone. So I think what they're proposing is the website piece would stay, I guess, subject to the other provisions about removing the limitations portion, but that the attestation of signing a form for the ACB that says, yeah, we provide this, would go away. And I agree with ONC's assessment that that has minimal value.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the way the two work together is that only some of the information is being removed, but the transparency and disclosure requirements remain available as they are now.
And it's also saying that because of the conditions of certification and information blocking provision now, there are certain limitations that vendors are not going to be permitted to have on their health IT if they limit use, exchange, and portability of any data. So it's sort of a like a catch-22, right? So I think they are saying, too, in combination with the new regulatory aspects, that that's another reason that this doesn't make sense to have them attest to their ACB. Because they're going to have to do an attestation that they don't information block, which would mean that they don't have any of those types of limitations on their products.
Right.
So I was.
And other states still stand. Yeah.
I thought it was a little complicated to read, but I finally figured it out. But it wasn't the most
straightforward. Yep, that makes sense. I don't know that I have any issue with it as proposed.
Carolyn, did you have anything?
No, I agree. It was not the most straightforward piece of text, but I think I concur with what you said, Denise.
Okay, then I think we can move on. So going to number six, which is discussion around agreement to recognize Food and Drug Administration processes, and specifically calling out some of the software pre-certification that the FDA announced back in 2017. I found this section a little bit difficult to understand what they're actually kind of driving towards. But people have thoughts and on this one?
This is, and maybe I'm not fully getting exactly what they're trying to propose, but a couple of reactions. Just taking it on the pre-certification process from the FDA, are they speaking of the risk framework that was part of the work of the those were at least guidance developments that came out of the FDA not long ago that kind of served to identify different categories of software, the FDASIA work. Is that being referred to here? I'm sorry if I'm being a little dense. Because if it is, that makes more sense than outright pre-market types of activities that are done for regulated medical devices that may be software, because I think that's a completely different aim, and honestly, for both of them, there's only kind of a, I don't mean to sound flippant, but there's only kind of a serendipitous overlap between the FDA constructions and ONC certification. Software may happen to fall. Go ahead.
I think they're specifically looking at certification criteria that's in the ONC Health IT certification program, where there is some potential overlap or redundancy related to quality management systems criteria and the 2015 edition safety enhanced design criterion. I think what ONC is suggesting here is that if the process that a vendor goes through with the FDA pre-certification program, that they would provide some exemptions to these criterion in the Health IT certification program, which to me makes sense that they're recognizing. And they did say here, it depends on the final framework of the FDA software pre-certification, because if the final recommendations don't align, then
right.
This may not be appropriate. And, I mean, it seems to make sense. Any place where the ONC can look at other regulatory programs that may overlap with them and take advantage of the opportunity to reduce the regulatory burden, then I mean, I'm all for that.
Yeah
I agree. And it was the last part of your statement that sort of confused me a little bit, because the way that I read it, I did read it very quickly, it sort of sounded like the FDA is doing some stuff around pre-cert, and there's the FDASIA report, and we're not quite sure where they're settling, but if they settle in a place that we like, we may want to align these.
Yeah.
And I agree with that, but the key part is we don't know exactly what that's going to look like yet. So that's why I was just kind of wondering about timing of this and what the actual action is here.
Yeah, it's hard to judge a benefit from something like this yet. So.
Yeah, they do say despite these proffered benefits, there may be reasons not to adopt such a recognition program. So, for example, stakeholders may not agree that the FDA software pre-certification program sufficiently aligns with our program. So I think, you know, and then there is an RFI around this. I don't think we were asked to respond to the RFI, but as a task force, we were just supposed to respond to this.
Well, I guess
this recognition as part of the regulatory.
I guess it's something that is not quite ready for a proposal. Given the lack of knowledge here, the thing that's a little odd about it, it's kind of a prospective thing that we don't have enough information really to make it. Conceptually, it sounds great. I agree.
Aspirate.
But until we really know its intersect, it's hard to react to it and say, well, if it does work out that it's valuable, do it, but if it isn't, don't. Well, it's kind of like that's not worth a lot of commentary until we know more to actually make a judgment about it because there's not enough known. So it may be something to postpone and defer to future rulemaking when more is known.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would have concerns committing to, and I don't know if they're asking for a commitment, but concerns about removing something like safety enhanced design without knowing exactly how the pre-certification program is going to work out and seeing data about performance of products under pre-certification, because the pre-certification really puts a lot of pressure on active safety surveillance to catch any issues that could be popping up in the marketplace. And so there's a whole host of other mechanisms that need to be developed to make pre-certification work. And so the ONC would have to move in that direction as well. I think just saying we're going to recognize pre-certification and then not also developing those other processes is problematic from a safety perspective for sure. So I'd have a lot of concerns with that.
Well, I think really all they're proposing here is that they would establish processes that would provide for a recognition program. I don't think they're actually saying what that's going to look like because they don't have enough information. I think on its face value that's a good aspirational thing to do. But I don't think they're suggesting anything concrete beyond that. And maybe Kate can confirm this, but this is how I read it.
Yeah, that's how I read it, Denise. This is Carolyn. I my sense is that the recognition that FDA has announced that it's going in this other direction and the specifics of that are still perhaps being operationalized in ways that people are trying to figure out what that means. That's not unusual with FDA guidances, actually. And it's kind of more a tribute to interagency cooperation and trying to work together to make things more seamless for users and developers and such. But I didn't read it as a promise of something particular or kind of a blanket acceptance of whatever comes down the road.
Just curious, Sasha, did you see it any differently?
No. I had similar sort of sense of this is an intriguing idea. It's not clear how the specifics of it would work. I guess I think it merits exploration, but I didn't get a sense that there was a specific proposal of how it would be implemented here.
No, it just says they would propose to develop processes to have a recognition program, depending on what comes out of the FDA framework. We have that right, Kate?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, part of the reason the request for information is included. So nothing's like set in stone yet.
I mean, I would say we either, you know, no recommendation or a recommendation saying continue exploration and importantly seek data to show effectiveness or lack of effectiveness of the pre-cert program before making any moves on the ONC side.
Well, I think we're going to have a lot of recommendations, so I'd be fine on this one, just leaving it be.
Okay. What other? Yeah. What others think?
I mean, I agree. It's kind of a little bit of an interesting one, probably for the very same reason, not worth really even raising at this point. But that's hardly a. We've probably invested more time discussing it than it really merits. So. It costs nothing. It does nothing for now.
Yep, fair. Sasha, Carolyn, other thoughts from your side?
I'm fine with no recommendation.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Next slide. Okay, so I think that covers all the deregulation items.
Right, and do we actually have a meeting on the schedule yet for Thursday? I think to go over the summary of recommendations.
If it hasn't gone out yet, it will be going out shortly. I believe it's 2:30 to 3:30.
Eastern, I assume?
Yes, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Eastern.
I don't see it yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's come out yet, but it's going to.
Okay, so we'll spend that meeting reviewing recommendations, I think we should be set up pretty well for the initial presentation the following week.
I think in the meantime, if everyone would take a chance to review the notes in the Google Docs, because that would be the source of the recommendations that are going to go into the summary that we're going to present at the HITAC. And Kate's putting that together for us.
Yes, and I sent folks a link to the Google Doc for the Word doc of the recommendations. I didn't. Obviously, nothing's finished, but I started at least where, you know, we had started discussions around real-world testing and attestations. So I'll work on getting the rest of those items in. So if you want to take a look at that document as well and, you know, edit as you see fit.
Okay. Yeah, so we welcome everyone on the task force to take a look, and that would help prepare us for Thursday so we can get through it in the hour that we have scheduled. I actually think for the ONC team and Sal that we can probably schedule that for an hour and 15 minutes. We just need to break to have a quick debrief, and then we all have a 4 o'clock. I know Sasha and I do, and Lauren.
Okay. Can we move to public comment? Is that what's next?
Yep. So I think that we've settled. And yeah, I agree, Denise. We can probably just add an additional 15 minutes if that works for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so, operator, can you open the public line?
Yes. If you would like to make a public comment, please press *1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press *2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please.
And do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
There are no public comments at this time.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll turn it back. I know we still have about 15 minutes left. If there's anything we wanted to recap, but otherwise, I think we'll just start preparing the presenting the draft recommendations, taking what's in the Google Doc and transforming that into the slide deck to present to the full committee next week. Kate, anything else from your end?
No, that covers it, Lauren. Thanks.
Alrighty. Well, I think we got a lot accomplished over the last two meetings. We've had these back-to-back meetings, I know, have been a bit much, but it helped us to get to where we are today. So just want to thank everyone for your time today, and we will talk again on Thursday.
Yes, and thank you to all the task force members for your commitment of time. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your leadership. We appreciate that.
Thanks, all.
Okay, thank you. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
All right, well, we'll dial in for debrief.
Okay, perfect.